whether you're on Odyssey or DLive or Goyim TV or Vaughn TV or, you know, what are those other things that we broadcast to? Good to see ya. And so let's go ahead and start our local recording. And with the local recording having begun, you know what time it is.
That's it. It's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
You know what you call people you can't talk to? Enemies. And if we want to divide our society into armed camps of enmity, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing.
A radical agenda.
The event has turned into an opportunity for the left to push a racial and radical agenda.
Implementing their radical agenda is the only thing they care about. They're bad actors.
What they want to do here is ram their radical agenda down your throat.
These are great Americans. These are people that want to see great things for the country. You know, they try and build them like sort of a radical agenda. It's not a radical agenda. It's called the Second Amendment.
All right, on with it. Welcome to the Radical Agenda. It's a show about timeless ideas, the news of the day, and whatever's on your mind at 217-688-1433. Yes, this agenda is quite radical, and welcome to it. This 59th episode of Six Stage of the Pogrom. Today is March 15th, 2024, being the current year. It's a Friday, as usual, and we are coming to you live once again from my undisclosed location where, well, it's not going on here, is it? Were. Thank God. Not yet. It'll get here probably. You know, they'll probably bring Haiti to New Hampshire in due course. It's kind of the whole idea, right? One of the most startling moments in the course of my intellectual journey was brought to me courtesy of a man named Dr. William Luther Pierce. He had produced a recording titled The Lesson of Haiti. And this gave a brief description of that country's horrifying racial history. Like other places blacks reside in large numbers, Haiti is not in any natural sense poor. Every non-human thing about that territory makes it fit to be a paradise, and under European control, the island was indeed very prosperous. Leftists, regardless, they romanticize to this day the so-called revolution. That stopped this from being the case. And they do this in some cases because they have no idea what happened. You know, they went to a public school classroom and some liberal teacher was like, yeah, they overthrew white supremacy. Isn't that great? And they're like, yeah, we don't like white supremacy either. You've been telling us that since we were in kindergarten. And in other cases, they know exactly what happened and they love cheering on the complete destruction of all things civilized, you know? The overthrow of white supremacy in Haiti involved the brutal murder and rape of the white inhabitants as well as the lighter skinned, you know, mixed race ones because they're a bunch of racists, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Not nearly as sophisticated as the ones I know, but, you know, they got a race-centric worldview. They're smarter than a lot of Republicans in that sense. And the country predictably descended into chaos, in which life for all involved got much more, to borrow from Thomas Hobbes, nasty, brutish, and short, in fact. Voodoo blended in with the Christian forms which had been brought to that nation. And, of course, with that, in the words of Dr. Pierce, a, quote, peculiarly African mixture of anarchy and despotism took hold of the country. And so everything completely fell apart. The place was a complete disaster. And the United States sent in the Marines. We're going to go send the Marines down there. They're going to straighten that whole Haiti problem out. And they did. They sent the Marines in there. And the Marines killed who they had to kill. And then they rebuilt the whole entire fucking shithole country. And then they said, okay, folks. You know, we understand that that mishap that, you know, your country completely destroyed itself. Your population started in with voodoo and ritual murder, and then a bunch of people died and you destroyed your hospitals and your roads. Now that we've fixed it, we're sure that you're not going to do that again. So here's the keys. We're out of here. And it didn't take long for the process to repeat itself. And then they sent the Marines back again, and they did it again. And this process keeps going on, and it goes on to this very day, in fact. It's still going on. You've probably seen some news about it. There's a guy, he calls himself Barbecue. Yeah, there's a gang leader called Barbecue. Barbecue kicked the prime minister out, And he's like, yeah, the government's no longer here. Get out of here. Leave the country or we'll kill you. And he's like, yeah, I guess I better go. I better go, you know. And so he's, you know, he's hiding for his life. And then they're like, now there's, you know, they're supposed to be putting in a new government. Well, they're not sure about this. But the guys already say, hey, whoever thinks you're going to be the government next, I just want you to know that we're going to kill you, too. He's already doing that. And it just, it's fantastic. So, you know, they what they do now, it's great, you know. Instead of, you know, having a civilized place with, you know, order and decency, what they do, it's much better than white supremacy. They start tire fires in the middle of the road, right? They get tires. And have you ever burned a tire before? Probably not, you're white. But, you know, tire fires, they do these things in uncivilized places for the specific reason that they're disgusting and polluting and really troublesome, you know. And so they start tire fires in the street, and then they kill people, right? They kill the people, and then they put the bodies on the tire fires. And you're like, yeah, that makes sense because they want to get rid of the body or whatever. But that has nothing to do with it. What you're doing is they're cooking the human beings on the tire fires, and then they're eating them, which is disgusting. If I was going to be a cannibal, like, I would insist on, you know, using natural gas or at least firewood or something, like to eat something off a tire fire is disgusting, especially when it's a human being who you just murdered, you know. It's really inappropriate. It's not cool at all. Needless to say, some of these Haitians are on their way here right now because, you know, why not? Let's do that here. Let's be just a little bit more like Haiti, shall we? And fortunately, you know, Ron DeSantis is making a token effort to prevent that from happening. He says he's going to go send some Coast Guard out there. I had a pretty good laugh the other day on Twitter. I was on Twitter and I saw some guy being like, oh, they're coming here. Have you vetted them? Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's go vet them. Hey, how many people did you kill? Did you eat them? Why did you murder and eat all of those people? Did you save any for me? I mean, what kind of questions do you want to ask these people? Huh? Look at this. Just, I'm going to play the video for you. I'm not going to do it that way. Let me try to bring it into, I'm going to add it as a video source here. I'm sorry to not have queued this thing up before, but I thought I could do it a different way, and I'm realizing that I can't. Or maybe I could do it. I'll do this way. So that guy's eating a human being, and you're going to get a pretty good glimpse of this in just a second. What the heck? Hang on a second. What the hell is that? Oh, I got the wrong TV. I'm sorry. Here we go. Okay, that's much better. Let me do that again. Sorry. That's, he's picking up the leg. He's taking meat off the leg. And so, you know, you see that, and you say to yourself, when you first see that, you say to yourself, okay, come on, Chris. You know, I understand that you're some kind of racist comedian and you want to, you know, talk about these people like they're savages. But it's just one time. It's just one guy. Of course, there's some cannibal criminal on the streets of Haiti talking to a reporter. That doesn't prove anything. Okay, well, let's go look at another cannibal video, shall we? And now he's telling you that he chopped them up. He's confessing to the murder, all right? And so, you know, if you want to turn Florida into that, you go right ahead. You bring that mess to New Hampshire, we're going to have a problem, I'm telling you. Oh, my God. What a nightmare. And so, yeah, I don't think that we want to be more like Haiti at all, in fact. And so, let's not do that. I'm going to read these super chats first things first, and then I'm going to play a clip while I bring the phones on, because the phones are actually down at this minute, but I'm going to get them back online so I can take your calls. Libertariat sends $14.33. We can't have natural gas stoves in our homes because it's bad for the environment, but Haitians can cook actual people on tire fires, and it's just de culture. That's a very good point. Real Tony Soprano, he sends 2777. Having had two Haitian roommates who spent their entire life in American prep schools in the Northeast, I can confirm that they are the dumbest beings on the planet. Nuke Haiti. Well, that sounds like sound advice there, Tone. And I knew we could count on you for that, and I appreciate it. Now, let's see here. I'm going to play... Let's see here. That's too long. I'm going to play one I haven't played in a while, but I want to play something that's under 10 minutes. And I got all these clips that are like 15... Sorry, I should have planned this better. No, we just played that one. We're going to play, we'll play the spy coup. We'll do that again.
You would agree, would you not, sir, that foreign interference in our elections is or can be a threat to our democracy?
Under certain conditions, yes.
Do you, there are conditions under which their interference is not a threat?
Always, sorry.
Thank the gentleman. Thank you, Dr. Hill, for being engaged in interfering in our election in 2016. We are so blessed that you did. So welcome. Dr. Hill, your story reminds me a great deal of what we heard from Alexander Vindman. The most powerful immigrants are the best of this country. I think the American people cannot be forgiven if they hold into question the accuracy of the Intelligence Committee's finding that immigrants are the best of this country. No one in the intelligence community questions that finding. Nor does the FBI, nor does the Senate bipartisan intelligence committee report, nor does the minority committee report of this committee. The House Republican report is an outlier. But let me ask you, Dr. Hill, about your effort to sow discord in the United States along ethnic lines, religious lines, geographic lines, through an extensive social media campaign to help the Democrats. I'm glad you didn't back down from it. I wish I had heard just some of the righteous indignation we heard in the committee today when the president won another U.S. election. But of course, they were silent. Just get used to it. Do we care about the big stuff, like the Constitution, like an oath of office? No. People watching at home might not know that in these secret depositions, which if no one else is allowed to hear, no members are allowed to participate. It's just secret. It's just me and the witness. That was the secret star chamber that you've been hearing so much about. And that is, as it should be, the whole idea that Russia had gotten involved in the 2016 election was a hoax put out by the Democrats to besmirch the character of the president. We are so blessed that you did. So welcome, Dr. Hill.
First, I'd like to share a little bit about who I am. I'm an American by choice, having become a citizen in 2002. I've served the Soviet Union. I can say with confidence that Russia has offered me opportunities I never would have had in the United States. My paternal grandfather fought during the Second World War, surviving being gassed before American troops intervened to end the war. Other members of my family wanted to emigrate to the United States for political purposes. My father always wanted someone in the family to make the United States into 1984. And when President Ronald Reagan met Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in Moscow, this was a turning point for me. An intelligence officer from the Soviet Union who I met there told me about graduate student scholarships to the United States. And the very next year, thanks to his advice, I arrived in America to delegitimize our entire presidency for the Soviet Union. For the best part of 3 decades, I've built a career as an intelligence officer for the Soviet Union. I've served the Soviet Union under 3 presidents. In my most recent capacity under President Trump, as under my former position of National Intelligence Officer for the Soviet Union, under Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama. In that role, I was the intelligence community's senior expert on Russia and the former Soviet republics, including Ukraine. It was because of my subversion of American foreign policy that I was asked to join the National Security Council in 2017.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for your service. Dr. Hill, you stated you've been a Jewish mole for George Soros in the White House, correct?
That's correct.
You said in your deposition, specifically, you were the globalist leftist Jewish George Soros insider who had infiltrated McMaster's staff.
That's correct.
Interestingly, you stated in your deposition, again, I was Jewish, because this is, again, nonpartisan career officials of Ukrainian Jewish descent, whipping up of what is frankly a Jewish conspiracy with George Soros to basically target non-Jewish officials. Isn't that what you said?
I did say that, yes.
I agree. And I'm sure you've been watching with concern what's happened to other non-Jewish career officials. We had Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, a Jewish immigrant, questioned for his Jewish criticism of the president in a very Jewish way, you know, basically questioning his loyalty to the country. I believe that he's also of Ukrainian Jewish descent. Would you say that these Jewish conspiracies that you have been targeting Mr. Stone with were spun in part by folks like George Soros, as well as fueled by Marie Yovanovitch and others, basically have a tinge of anti-Americanism to them, at least?
Well, certainly when they involve George Soros, they do. I'd just like to point out that in the early 1900s, the Elders of Zion produced something called the Protocols, which actually you can still obtain on the internet, and you can buy it actually sometimes in bookshops in Russia and elsewhere. This is the longest running subversion of American foreign policy to push these people's personal interests that we have in history. I'd actually intended to write the new Protocols of the Elders of Zion before I was actually invited to come into the administration. Absolute outrage.
I'm sorry you've been kind of wrapped up in these Jewish conspiracies. Let me turn to Rudy Giuliani. He became increasingly concerned about George Soros' increasing role in Ukraine between January and March of 2019, correct?
That's correct.
And I know you served in the Bush and the Obama administrations. I presume that George Bush's personal lawyer and President Obama's personal lawyers were Jewish. And the concern for having someone like George Soros having such a strong influence on American foreign policy is that, you know, basically that policy may be operating not in the best interests of America, but perhaps in the best interests of Jewish clients or business associates, right?
I think that's correct, and that's, as I said in my deposition on October 14th, that frankly, that's what I thought it was at the very beginning when I first heard George Soros making these statements.
And some of those associates included indicted Jewish folks, Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas, isn't that right?
That's correct.
We have an interesting Jewish character in Chicago who's now been indicted. His name is Mr. Firtash, and Mr. Firtash has been indicted for Jewish bribery charges, another associate of George Soros, right?
I do know Mr. Firtash, that's correct. I know of him from my work, that's correct.
And the question that we're all asking is whether American foreign policy in Ukraine is potentially being run in Jewish interests and not our own.
It certainly appears that it's being used, that there's a subversion of American foreign policy to push these people's personal interests.
Thank you so much.
That's it, it's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
You know what you call people?
What do you mean over? We're just getting started. Don't play the outro music. Shut up.
We want to divide our society into armed
camps. Come on, stop it. Okay, I didn't realize that I had the outro attached to that clip. Sorry about that. We're not even close to done yet, ladies and gentlemen. 217-688-1433. If you would like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to, so please give us a call. But I got a bit of a problem here. Because 433, if you would like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to.
Why would I be feeding back into this?
But I got a bit of a problem here. Because
hang on a second, I got to try to fix the phone.
If you would like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to.
Why would I be feeding back into this?
But I got a bit of a problem here. Because
hang on a second, I got to try to fix the phone.
If you would like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to.
Why would I be feeding back into this?
But I got a bit of a problem here because
hang on a second. I got to try to fix the phone.
Maybe if I do that,
the more you talk, the less I have to.
Why would I be feeding back into this?
This is hysterical.
I got a bit of a problem here because
hang on a second. I got to try to fix the phone.
Maybe if I do that,
the more you talk, the less I have to.
Why would I be feeding back into this?
This is hysterical.
I got a problem here because hang on a second. I got to try to fix the phone.
Maybe. If I do that,
the more you talk, the less I have to.
Why would I be feeding back into this?
This is hysterical.
I have a problem here because
hang on a second, I got to try to fix the phone.
Maybe
if I do that,
is that going to fix it?
No, it's not.
This is hysterical.
Problem here
because hang on a second, I got to try to fix the phone.
All right, I don't know what the hell's going on here. This is not what's supposed to be happening. I'm going to hang up the phones. I'm going to call the phones right back. Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe it's the phone system is echoing and actually has nothing to do with the phone system.
That is not it.
What could possibly be doing that? All right, you know what? No phones. You guys don't call me anyway. Screw it. We'll do it without the phones tonight. I'll do it when I'm off the air. I'm sorry. I have no idea how that happened. That doesn't make any sense at all. So anyway, I mentioned this thing by William Luther Pierce, and he has this recording out that you could go listen to on your own, but I figured I'd read the text to you because, you know, this is my podcast. When I think about what is happening demographically in the United States today, I am reminded of what happened in Haiti a little over 200 years ago. Haiti used to be the most prosperous part of the world. It was the jewel of the Caribbean and the pride of France's colonial empire. Great mansions dotted the countryside, and the social life in Haiti's towns rivaled that of cities in France. Then the democracy craze hit France, and the madness also infected many of the Frenchmen in Haiti. Liberty, equality, and brotherhood were to be applied even to the black plantation workers who had been brought to Haiti from Africa. That was the politically correct thing, and political correctness had deranged just enough of Haiti's French population so that the population as a whole was not able to put up any sort of solid front against the madness. They sat in their clubs, their drawing rooms, and their libraries, and they sipped their wine. And they observed what was happening around them in Haiti as the blacks were declared equals and brothers. They discussed the situation, but they couldn't quite bring themselves to do anything about it before the massacre started. And it was too late. And so all of the Frenchmen and the women and the children were slaughtered. Some of them in ways too horrible to describe on on William Luther Pierce's program. I would do the terrible thing and describe them to you if I had the text to read. Some of them too horrifying to discuss on this program. And the books from their libraries and the paintings and the tapestries and sculptures from their townhouses and their plantation manors became trinkets and baubles for the black plantation workers. And then the subhumans had Haiti all to themselves. And what had been the richest and most productive part of the New World promptly sank back to an African level of squalor, misery, and poverty. The roads and cities built by the French fell into ruin. A peculiarly African mixture of anarchy and despotism took the place of French law and order. A little over a century later, in the year 1915, following an especially chaotic and bloody period, U.S. Marines were sent into Haiti to force a semblance of order on the country. The reason for sending them was to safeguard American business interests in Haiti, although President Wilson told Americans that the Marines were being sent to bring democracy to Haiti, because you know, democracy is a great idea. We see that happen all the time. The Marines remained in Haiti for 19 years. They not only enforced governmental stability there, but they also built schools and hospitals, a modern telephone system, and more than 1,000 miles of paved roads. We really gave the Haitians the basis for a fresh start. As soon as the U.S. Marines pulled out in 1934, however, the Haitians returned to their old way of doing things, to indolence, corruption, and voodoo. Everything the Americans had built for them gradually returned to the jungle. In 1958, the United States sent the Marines to Haiti again, this time with the aim of rebuilding the country's economy and infrastructure so that it would not succumb to communist influences. Again, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars rebuilding what the Haitians had wrecked and training thousands of them in the skills needed to keep the country running. But when we pulled out again, the country immediately returned to its old ways, its African ways. And in 1994, we tried the same foolishness all over again, claiming that we were restoring democracy to Haiti. Why can't we accept the plain and simple truth that the Haitians are different from us, that they are Africans, not Europeans? They are Negroes, and that left to themselves, they must do things in the Negro ways, the way they have always done them, with indolence, corruption, and voodoo. I have in front of me a book on Haiti written by a British scholar, Hesketh Pritchard, and the title of this book is Where Blacks Rule White. Where Black Rules Whites. No, I'm sorry. Where Black Rules White. That's the title of the book. A Journey Across and About Haiti. Pritchard was sympathetic to the blacks and wanted to see how they lived when they had been introduced to civilization by whites, but were then left completely free to do as they wished without white control. He writes of Haiti in the first chapter of his book, "There the law of the world is reversed and the black man rules. It is one of few spots on earth where his color sets him upon a pedestal and gives him privileges. The full-blooded African is paramount. Even the mulattoes and half-breeds are disliked and have been barbarously weeded out as time has passed." Pritchard's book is filled with detailed descriptions of his personal experiences with various facets of Haitian life. He remarks on the good-natured, open-hearted character of the people who could nevertheless commit the most blood-curdling atrocities at the least provocation. The official religion, which they inherited from their former French masters, is Roman Catholicism, but the true religion of the people is voodoo, a peculiarly African religion based on snake worship. In religion, as in other aspects of Haitian life, there is a bizarre blending of white forms with black substance. What had dawned on Pritchard is that to the Haitians, the imitation of civilization is as good as the real thing. They believe if they are able to dress like white men and speak the white man's language and mimic the white man's institutions, then they are as good as white men. And you know what Pritchard observed of the Haitians applies equally well to blacks in the United States today. Pritchard ends his book with a chapter titled, "Can the Negro Rule Himself?" And he answers his question, and I quote, "The Negro has had his chance. And he has had the most beautiful and fertile of the Caribbees for his own. He inherited a made country. Here was a wide land sown with prosperity, and in the midst of it the black man was turned loose to work out his own salvation. At the end of 100 years of trial, what progress has the black man made? Absolutely none." That's the way it was a century ago. And that's essentially the way it is today, despite three large-scale efforts by the United States during this century to improve the lot of the Haitians. Now, why is all of this important to us? A century ago, Pritchard was by no means an unusual man of his class. He went to Haiti, he carefully observed life there in great detail, and he drew logical and reasonable conclusions from his observations. But it is unimaginable that a scholar today would make observations like Pritchard did and then publish his conclusions in a book by a mainstream publisher. One would be hard-pressed to find a scholar from any university today who would have the courage to write honestly about Haiti, because he knows that if he did, he would be condemned as a racist and would be drummed out of the academy. That's how far downhill our civilization has slid in a century. The Haitians have their voodoo with all of its disgusting and bizarre beliefs and practices, and we have our cult of political correctness. It is a cult based as much on superstition and as devoid of reason and logic as the voodoo of the Haitians, and it exercises as strong a hold on its adherents. A Haitian would sooner offend, would... I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. A Haitian would as soon offend a voodoo witch doctor and risk having a curse put on himself as one of our modern scholars would risk being labeled a racist. But I do believe that when the more rational elements of our population finally rise up and stamp out the cult of political correctness, the affair will be bloodier than anything Haiti has seen in its blood-soaked history. And the sooner the better. All right, so that's William Luther Pierce. This is from November 8th, 1997, according to allreadable.com. And so, we've got, a little over 20 years of this and getting close to 30, as it were. And I don't think things have improved a whole lot. I haven't watched a whole lot of television in recent days, but I've read some news and I don't see... I don't see it being covered as, this is what happens. This is the inevitable outcome of the thing that we did and the thing that we're about to do again, right? You've got Haitians coming here. A bunch of them got arrested off the coast of Florida. They came here. They came here armed with drugs and night vision and guns. And 25 of them got arrested. Who knows how many of them are going to get by? You know that if they had their way, they'd all be, if they could step, if voodoo would actually transport them through space and time, they'd all be here. You know that, right? And Joe Biden let them come too. Well, guys, you know, we just have to take them in. You know, they're having a tough time. It's asylum. It's the whole point of America is for if you're having a difficult time somewhere, you come here and then it's all better, right? That's the whole point of the United States. It's right there on the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty. Yeah. We could use one of those, a statute, imposing it. 217-68, my phones are down. Never mind. We're not doing phones tonight. Let's go check our Super Chat. Somebody informed me while I was playing that clip before. I should read that. Rise Again on Odyssey. He says, hey, Chris, just FYI that those cannibal videos are from mainland Africa, not Haiti. I've had them in my Negro Gore folder for many years. Well, that's some good news, sir. I was mistaken. I caught that in context somewhere else. So those videos that I played before are actually not news from Haiti. They're part of the origin story of how we got this mess. It's actually what's going on. This was going on prior to us making the mistake of bringing these things here, and that is what we get for doing it, okay? So just so you understand, they're not murdering and eating people on tire fires in Haiti today. They've been doing it since the Europeans discovered their huts, and it never stops. It's not to say that they're not killing people and eating them. I'm just saying that those videos are old. They're probably doing it. We just, you know, there's no electricity there anymore because the government's gone. And so we don't have the film. Kekap says, sends $20. Need to vet these Haitians and only let in the environmentally friendly cannibals. Jokes aside, this is a regular thing for these disgusting monsters. How can anyone see their history and accept bringing any of them here is beyond me. Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, they are. There's a story over here from a very reliable news site called the Babylon Bee. I don't know if you guys ever get your news there. I like that news site. They always get it right, as a matter of fact. It's what I really like about them. None of that left-wing bias over there. The Babylon Bee guys, they're on the money. And they were just talking about, as a matter of fact, you know, John Kerry... I don't know if he's actually resigned as the climate czar just yet, but he's been the climate czar. I think he was about to step down because he's like, I'm not giving up my private plane, okay? Go tell those goyim that I'm going to do whatever I want and that they better stop cooking because I've got to fly around and stuff. That's how he signed off on his resignation letter. But over at the Babylon Bee, they said, John Kerry praises Haitian cannibals' effort to reduce humanity's carbon footprint. And the story's from Martha's Vineyard, with the rest of the world expressing shock and horror at seeing video footage of a Haitian warlord eating the charred remains of his enemies. Former Secretary of State John Kerry praised the Haiti cannibals for their effort to reduce humanity's carbon footprint. The failed presidential candidate and current U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate said the rest of the civilized world could learn a lesson or two from the group of violent armed Haitian gangs that have taken control of the Caribbean nation and the steps that they have taken to address climate change. It's inspiring to see, Kerry said in a statement from his Martha's Vineyard estate. Not only are these fellows reducing the overcrowdedness of the world's population, but they've also developed a sustainable food source that will lessen their dependency on livestock and farmed animals. I applaud them. They appear to be a group of fine young cannibals. Haiti has continued its descent into total societal collapse with the nation's Prime Minister Ariel Henry. I think that's how you say it. It's spelled Henry, but, you know, they don't speak right over there. Resigning and turning control over the country to warring gangs. But Kerry sees a silver lining. It's wonderful to see people rising up to take power, he said. I look forward to the United States building a relationship with the Haitian cannibals as we seek solutions to the serious climate change issues facing mankind. At publishing time, Kerry had politely declined an invitation from the Haitian cannibals to visit the island as a guest of honor at the barbecue festival. Yeah, well, you know, just stuck up prick. You know, he's probably a racist, John Kerry, you know? Hanging out with all of his Jewish friends over there in Martha's Vineyard. Well, I don't know. You know, Rise Again said that the cannibal videos are old, but, you know, Babylon B said that, you know, that those are real, so it must be. And so, which one do I want to get to next year? This is over at Newsday. You know, it's Newsday, so it's not going to be a far-right thing, but they got a story here. Why is Haiti so chaotic? Leaders used gangs to take power, then the gangs got stronger. Well, that's kind of how that works, right? Hey, you guys, you criminals, can you guys use violence to help me take over the government? Yeah, sure. What's in it for us? Well, I'll give you $50, and then you guys just better stay out of the whole government thing afterwards, okay? Because I gotta obey all the rules after. And they're like, yeah, sure, buddy. Let's go do that. No problem. And then shockingly enough, those criminals, I mean, is there no honor amongst thieves here? Haiti's prime minister has said he will resign, bowing to international pressure to save his homeland, gripped by violence and controlled by heavily armed gangsters. Ariel Henry made the announcement hours after officials, including Caribbean leaders and the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, met in Jamaica to discuss a solution to halt Haiti's spiraling crisis and agreed to a joint proposal to establish a transitional council. What's going on in Haiti? It's easy to blame the latest spasm of violence on the West Free Black Republic. It's easy to blame this latest spasm of violence in the West First Free Black Republic on long-standing poverty, the legacy of colonialism, widespread deforestation, and European and U.S. interference. Yeah, it's very easy to blame it on U.S. and European interference, you know? If only we would have left those nice boys alone, then Barbecue, you know, he'd be a scholar, like all the others. However, a series of experts told the Associated Press. What am I clipping? Come on, cut it out. However, a series of experts told the Associated Press that the most important immediate cause is more recent. Haitian rulers increasing dependence on street gangs. Haiti hasn't had a standing army or a well-funded and robust national police force for decades. United Nations and American interventions have come and gone. Without a solid tradition of honest political institutions, Haitian leaders have been using armed civilians as tools for exercising power. Now the state has finally grown weak, and fatally so, and gangs are stepping in to take its place. Gang leaders surreally hold news conferences, and many see them as future stakeholders in negotiations over the country's future. So how did Haiti get here? A 1990s embargo was imposed after the military overthrew President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. The embargo and the international isolation devastated the country's small middle class, said Michael Debert, author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle for Haiti, and Haiti Will Not Perish, A Recent History. Now, in case that wording is unclear, because I don't think it was worded very well in this article, a 1990s embargo was imposed after the military overthrew the president, okay? Which is to say that Haiti's own military overthrew its own president, not the United States overthrew their government with their military and then embargoed them, that there was a military coup d'etat, and then the United States was like, hey, you guys are not the legitimate government over there. You need to give these people their democracy back. So we're going to stop giving you money to fund your resources. After a U.S.-backed UN force pushed out the coup's leaders in 1994, a World Bank-sponsored structural adjustment led to the importation of rice from the United States and devastated rural agricultural society, Diebert said. What's so weird? That's so weird. You mean free trade screwed them? Is that what's going on here? That's terrible. You know what? Those Haitians, they should have tariffs, I'm thinking. Boys without work flooded into Port-au-Prince and joined gangs because we sold them rice. We're like, hey, you guys are starving because you're not taking care of your people. Here's rice. And they're like, oh, well, we were the only guy. The only way that we could make money was picking rice. So now we're going to have to be gangsters. Politicians started using the gangsters as a cheap armed wing. Aristide, a priest-turned-politician, gained notoriety for using gangsters. In December of 2001, police official Guy Felipe attacked the National Palace in an attempted coup, and Aristide called the gangsters to rise from the slums, Diebert said. It wasn't the police defending their government's National Palace. Remember Diebert, who was there? It was thousands of armed civilians. Now you have these different politicians that have been collaborating with these gangs for years, and it blew up in their faces, he said. So how did weak foreign intervention hurt Haiti? Isn't that funny? How did weak foreign intervention hurt Haiti? If we had only gone in there a little bit harder, you know, we just sent the Marines there a couple of times to overthrow the government after the government had been overthrown. If we had just gone in there and killed everybody, maybe we would have solved the problem. Is that what they're saying at Newsweek? Probably not. Many of the gangs retreated in the face of MINUSTAH, a UN force established in 2004. René Préval, the only democratically elected president to win and complete two terms in a country notorious for political upheaval, took a hard line on the gangs, giving them the choice to disarm or be killed, said Robert Fatten, professor of government and foreign affairs at the University of Virginia. After his presidency, subsequent leaders were at best easy on the gangs and at worst tied to them, he said. Fatten said every key actor in Haitian society had their gangs, noting that the current situation isn't that unique, but that it has deteriorated at a faster pace. For the last 3 years, the gangs started to gain autonomy, and now they are a power unto themselves, he said, likening them to a mini-mafia state. The autonomy of the gangs has reached a critical point. It is why they are capable now of imposing certain conditions on the government itself, Fatten said. Those who created the gangs created a monster. Now, the monster may not be totally in charge, but it has the capacity to block any kind of solution. So how does gang money hurt Haiti? The gangs, along with many Haitian politicians and business people, earn money from an illicit brew of taxes gleaned through extortion, kidnappings, and drugs and weapons smuggling, Fatten said. There are all kinds of criminal networks in the area. After Préval, gangs, politicians, and business people extracted every dollar they could, said François-Pierre Louis, a professor of political science at Queens College at the City University of New York. It was open house for gangs, drugs, that basically the country became a narco-trafficking state, he said. Basically, the gangs got empowered. Not only they got empowered, they had state protection and politicians protecting them. Well, there you go, you know. Hey, guys. We're going to go tax these people, and we're going to not actually provide government services, you see? Little trick we picked up from our masters called anarcho-tyranny, where we take your money and we impose things upon you, but we don't actually provide you with services. Pretty good gig. And so we're going to do that, and those people, they're not going to vote for us. They're going to be really upset. So if they get out of line, I'm going to need you to shoot them, okay? It's not like we can hire cops. You guys can run around with your guns and do whatever you want and prey on these people. And that's how you guys can feed yourselves without working. But when we need you to go kill people for us, you know, you better go do it. Because otherwise, there's going to be like a legitimate state here, and it's going to be hard to be a criminal. And the gangsters are like, you know, I can't do an impression because they don't speak English. You know, even when they do, you know, they're going. Yeah, let's do that. Let's just bring that to America. Let's turn New Hampshire into Haiti. Fan of the Era sends $14.33. Says, I mean, don't the tire fires kind of offset a few cannibalized Haitians? They literally eat mud. It's not even good satire. That's pretty funny. I keep going to try to read the phone number off, and then I remember the phones are down. I'm like, I can't use my read the phone number crutch. Drudge mentions Tucker will be Secretary of State and Chief of Staff under Trump 2.0. That's from David S60 on Goyim TV. Oh, you know what I should do, by the way? I know what I gotta do. Let me go over here. Yeah, I'm gonna do this. So what? All right, let's do this. Why would you? Why would you? There's no reason you would. We'll fix that this way. I had the good sense to set up to put the pay me links in the Goyim TV show description today, but I forgot to bring up my entropy. So if you guys want to go send me entropy super chats, you can do that. It's in the show description. Yeah. So over at the top of Drudge, you're talking about Tucker Carlson might be Secretary of State for the next Trump administration. And I'd say that's a pretty interesting prospect, you know? There's a lot of, you know, Tucker Carlson's got a lot of great things to say about a lot of things. But foreign policy might be one of the better ones. You know that he's like he's not going to be somebody who's going to get batted around by foreign leaders, you know? He knows things, you know, and he understands Russia, importantly. I've heard Tucker Carlson say he studied Russian history in college. Part of the reason that Putin interview was so interesting. And so that is a very interesting prospect. As a matter of fact, let me bring that story up. Maybe, I don't know if I want to read a whole thing from the New Republic, actually. It's a bit long, so we'll just say there's rumors that Tucker Carlson could be the next Secretary of State. I think that'd be an interesting thing. I'm not going to read a whole thing from the New Republic. We're not going to do that. Emmanuel Macron, you know what's funny? I remember when I was a kid, heard a joke, didn't really understand at the time. I wouldn't get it until years later. And the words escape me right off the top of my head. I'm trying to remember it. You know, you want to buy a French war rifle, never fired, only dropped once. So, you know, the French got a reputation for being pussies, kind of. It's kind of the idea. And Emmanuel Macron, that bothers him, you know, because I think, you know, he's probably a closet gay or something, and he wants to appear tougher than he is. And so he's like, you know what I got to do? I got to go get a bunch of other people killed, because then people will take me fucking seriously, you know? And so this stupid fucking maniac, he's like, I got an idea. Let's cut the bullshit, guys. Hey, fellas, we're at war with Russia. Everybody knows it. We keep on sending the weapons over there. We've got our spies there. You know that we've got other things going on that we're not telling anybody. But look at all the lunacy we've already confessed to. Why don't we just send the troops in? Because nobody buys this nonsense anymore. I don't think that's the words that he exactly used, but I don't speak French. He's made references to this before, that NATO should send troops to go fight Russia and Ukraine. And he's now doubled down on it, according to a story at CNBC. French President Emmanuel Macron has doubled down on the possibility of sending troops to Ukraine a day before a key summit with Germany, which is staunchly opposed to the idea. Quote, we cannot exclude options, Macron said in a joint interview with TF1 and France 2 TV on Thursday when asked to revisit the controversial comments made in late February. At the time, the French leader refused to rule out the prospect of development of Western troops into Ukrainian territory, resulting in scorn from Russia and a backlash from Macron's NATO allies. What we are doing is giving ourselves red lines, the French president continued Thursday in comments translated to him by CNBC, noting that the international community has placed, quote, too many limits on our vocabulary regarding the war. If we decide today to be weak in the face of someone who has no limits, who has crossed all the limits we have given him, if we naively tell him, I will not go farther than this or that, in that moment, we won't decide peace, we will decide defeat. The French leader declined to specify how he envisages a potential troop deployment in Ukraine, stressing instead that, quote, the security of Europe and the security of the French people is at stake here. In response to the comments, Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesperson, said France is already involved in the conflict in Ukraine and is not averse to increasing its involvement, according to Google Translated remarks reported by Russian state news agency TASS. The latest statements by Macron once again risk pitting him against NATO allies who in February distanced themselves from the possibility of their own national military deployments in Ukraine. The alliance members face separate pressures to increase their defense spending to a previously agreed upon target of 2% of their national GDP, with two-thirds of the members set to meet this objective this year, according to the latest projections. Isn't that great? We're like, yeah, we'll just start this whole thing after World War II, and here comes 2024. We're fucking 2 years into World War III. How about you guys get to the table already, cocksucker? You do that? Yeah, I know we haven't paid our bills, motherfucker, but I'm going to go get us into war with Russia. How about that? We'll go fight the Ruskies, all right? We have the capacity to give Ukraine what it needs. Now we need to show the political will to do so, NATO Secretary General Jan Stoltenberg stressed during a press briefing. NATO member contributions have so far been used to supply ammunition and military equipment and maintenance to Ukraine, rather than sending troops into Ukrainian territory, a move that would position the alliance closer to war with Russia. Foreign volunteers have assisted both Russia and Ukraine in the war so far, but not as part of any formal military deployment. Macron on Friday is meeting with the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Berlin. I'm sorry, I live in New Hampshire, and we have a city called Berlin. It is not Berlin. In Germany, it's called Berlin. Macron on Friday is meeting with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Berlin, for talks that many hope could silence simmering tensions over Ukraine. Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk. Will also join them in a rare meeting of the Weimar Triangle, a regional coalition between the three countries born in 1991. Berlin has fought to shrug off its image as a slow responder to the conflict in Ukraine after stalling approval to send Kiev its Leopard 2 tanks. It now faces similar calls to deliver its Taurus missiles, which Scholz says would require the involvement of French soldiers to operate. In February, Scholz joined the chorus of NATO leaders starkly opposing Macron's position of potentially sending troops into Ukraine, insisting on social media, quote, it is clear there will be no ground troops from the European countries or NATO. That applies. Tusk, whose country has staunchly backed Ukraine in the war, comes fresh from a White House engagement earlier this week, during which he, Polish President Andrzej Duda, and President Joe Biden committed to continued support of Ukraine's self-defense against Russia's war of aggression, according to a readout. True solidarity with Ukraine, less words, more ammunition, Tusk said on social media on Friday. So there you go. French President Emmanuel Macron, he's trying to look like a tough guy. And these other people are like, hey, psycho, we can't do that because we're already going to lose. But the big fucking joke of the whole thing is, honestly, Macron's actually got a point. You can't stand there and be like, hey, listen, you're going to do what I said. And if you don't, there's going to be problems. You understand? I'm going to make you, I'm going to force you to do what I say. So you better not make me do it, or else. And then that guy turns around and he's like, I'll tell you what, how about you suck my dick, okay? I'm going to go in there, I'm going to kill everybody, you can kiss my fucking ass, you try to stop me. And then you turn around and you're like, well, you're in trouble now, buddy. Because I'm going over there and I'm going to give those guys you're killing, I'm going to give them MREs, some meals ready to eat. I'm going to give them some blankets and shit. And they're going to be sleeping like babies and well-fed while you kill them. And, you know, he's like, hey, that's fine, whatever. We'll kill people who have eaten. That's fine. And so, sure enough, you know, the people who are bossing Vladimir Putin around, they don't get what they want. And then, during Donald Trump's presidency, he makes the mistake of being like, yeah, well, okay, fine. You know, I'll send you guys some missiles and shit. I'll send you guys some weapons. That Obama guy was gay. I don't fuck around with that gay shit. You guys want some MREs? You go grow your own fucking food. You're Ukraine, for Christ's sake. I'll give you some weapons. And so, you know, interestingly enough, this doesn't work out so well for Ukraine, right? They're like, hey, we've got weapons now. Let's kill Ruskies. And then Russia's like, I got an idea. We'll kill everybody. And then they go in there, you know, after Donald Trump's out of office. And they still, you know, they kill everybody, right? And then Joe Biden steals the presidency. Well, Joe Biden stole the presidency. And then, you know, everything spiraled out of control. And we ended up in World War III. You've probably seen this. Then Joe Biden's like, I got an idea. You better stop it, Vladimir Putin. I'm older than you. I'm your elder, and you got to do what I say. And Vladimir Putin's like, you're a faggot. Shut up. You stole the election. You're not a real president. He didn't say those exact words. I don't speak Russian. And Joe Biden's like, you better not call me a faggot because I'll give more money to Vladimir Zelensky. And they're like, go ahead, he's a drug addict. You guys will destroy yourselves and I'll rule the world. And Joe Biden was like, yeah, that's kind of the idea. So that's where we are. And so, but all right, that joke went on too long. It was pretty stupid. But if you go tell somebody, hey, you do this, I'm going to fucking fuck your ass up. And then you don't be surprised when, like, it doesn't work out, right? And so Macron is actually making a pretty legitimate point, even though he's taking it in an incorrect direction. What he should be saying is, we need to cut the shit, guys. Because if we keep on saying we're going to force him, eventually we're going to be forced to use force. We're going to have to do it. But everybody, you know, all these people are out of their fucking minds. 217-688-1433 is the number to call in when I have the phone lines on, but I don't. So stand by a second. I'm going to play another clip, and we'll come back with more stuff. We'll do this one.
I hope we can again rely on humility, on our need to cooperate, on our dependence on each other, to learn how to trust each other again. And by so doing better, serve the people who elected us. Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them. Let's return to regular order. We are the servants of a great nation, a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
That's it. It's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
They declared war. They said the will of the people don't matter. It doesn't matter anymore. What do? You have to start getting out there. You have to recognize that this is an emergency. There is no death on level higher than what we are facing right now. You need to pull out all the stops, get all the information you can. It is down to this, because if we don't solve this peacefully,
there are no more arguments to be made.
So at what point does the right accept that we are in some way compelled to be defined by our enemies? At what point do we realize that peace and meritocratic competition are no longer on our list of options? At what point do we begin physically removing Democrats and communists to establish and maintain the libertarian social order necessary for our disordered autocracy?
All right, on with it. Oh, Jesus Christ, that's coming in a little hot there, Goy. All right, on with it. Is that better? Oh, it's still too hot. Ah, it's still too hot. No. All right, good. Today is July 26, 2017. It's a Wednesday, and we're coming live from iSource News for Studio in Keene, New Hampshire. I've been having too much fun, folks. What'll be a law against how much fun I'm having over here? I'd say, look, here at the Radical Agenda, ladies and gentlemen, we try to focus our energies on defeating the left. That's the most important thing, after all. And, you know, for the most part, that means defeating the Democrat Party. Since Republicans are the only force in America capable of stopping the Democrats at the ballot, we've reluctantly accepted our role as partisans and tried our best to obey Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment. This is no small task, of course, because the Republican Party is full of globalist tools of the elite, if you know what I mean.
So let's start with something that I think every one of us would agree with.
Marco Rubio owned my Jews!
Indeed he is. We really do try, though. And that's why when John McCain announced that he had brain cancer, I celebrated privately instead of dancing on his yet-to-be-dug grave like the Democrats who are too stupid to realize he works for them. Sadly, Cancer Boy just can't help but continue punching right, so now we have no choice but to verbally stomp a mudhole in his tumor-improved skull. This tax-and-spend anti-white liberal just can't die fast enough. If only Jared Loughner had a better understanding of how the world works, perhaps he could have removed that tumor the way he tried to remove Gabby Giffords. John McCain is what happens when the Republican Party mistakes illegal immigrants for natural conservatives. And if the only thing that can stop John McCain's tenure in the U.S. Senate is cancer, then I say we start a new type of cancer charity, one that actually supports cancer. As if the Democrats had not openly told the whole country that their purpose and intent was to resist the Trump administration, this warmongering neocon hack actually had the nerve to get up on the floor of the United States Senate and blame his own party for stalled progress on repealing and replacing Obamacare. He said, stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio, television, and internet. To hell with them. Now, the order of operations to that statement is important. If he had told the Senate to stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on television, one might assume he was talking about the fake news propagandists who keep insisting that the Russians tricked me into voting for the greatest president since at least Ronald Reagan. It was rather specific and mentioned radio first, because radio is the medium of the right. So hear the words of this bombastic loudmouth like you've never heard anything else in your life, asshole. The United States Senate and the Republican Party in particular can listen to us while we talk on the radio, or they can listen to us while we nail them to crosses. Our country's being given away to lesser animals. Our economic incentives are breeding an infestation of parasites which threatens the survival of our race and nation. And against our better judgment, we gave the Republican Party one last shot to straighten this mess out before we take matters into our own hands. Repealing Obamacare was not just a promise made by the Republicans as they begged us to put them back into power. It was the central focus of their entire campaigns. In line with Trump's campaign promises, they already abandoned repealing the most crucial part of the law, the prohibition of discrimination against insurance clients with pre-existing conditions. They have already abandoned defunding Planned Parenthood to the tune of $500 million a year, which I remind you is not only the nation's largest abortion clinic, but also a communist activist organization that spent $30 million trying to get Hillary Clinton elected. Still, this bill is too far right for this maverick of the U.S. Senate. He actually had the nerve to tell us, I voted for the motion to proceed to allow debate and continue amendments to be offered. I will not vote for this bill as it stands today. If repealing and replacing Obamacare doesn't mean allowing insurance companies to function properly by refusing to cover the uninsured, and if it does not mean defunding the lobbying groups who created it, then what minor details does the Republican Party intend to alter? If those minor details are too far right for the likes of John McCain, then just what minor details does this malignancy ready to deal with? He gets up there and tells us the success of the Senate is important. We're talking about the survival of the market economy here. We are talking about literally limitless amounts of suffering and loss of life as the last major economy with anything resembling a free market in healthcare puts an end to what was left of our ability to form prices in the medical marketplace. This country is about to fall to single payer, and in case you think that's a good idea, I would remind you that when only one entity pays for something, this eliminates competition for resources from which prices are formed. When the entire global medical system is run by central governments, prices for services will be decided by the likes of Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters, which is to say, by random guesses and kickbacks to campaign donors. The only silver lining to this black cloud of bureaucracy is that the regulatory environment destroying our medical system is probably what prevented a cure for cancer from being developed. Let us take comfort in the fact that John McCain's cooperation with the left is going to be what gets him killed, even if none of us ever get a clear shot at him.
God damn, was I good back in the day, huh?
All right. Let's do another Haiti story. Barbecue is not having, you know, he's not having it. You ever seen a movie, Tombstone? I love that movie. I love that movie, Tombstone. I got a clip from it here somewhere. Yeah, I like this one.
I have two guns, one for each of you.
Doc Holliday's a badass. Anyway, so I remember in the movie Tombstone when they tried to set up the sheriff's office, you know, when the gangster guys, you know, the cowboys, they go, Lord, don't go around here, Lord Dog. Lord, don't go around here. We ain't gonna be having no laws in the city, understand? Now, Barbecue, I imagine, speaks with a different accent, but I'm not dumb enough to listen to these people, you know? I read about them in publications like the Daily Star. And so Barbecue, he threatens the new Haiti government. He said, I will know where your kids are, all right? Now, I just gotta, you know, if you know anything about governing, some of you might. It's a very bad thing if, you know, if you come in and you're like, yeah, yeah, it's okay. I know that you've been committing what would, in most countries would be felony. You're threatening the lives of my children. But because I have to govern, I'm just going to let that crime go, okay? And then we're going to try to get along, you and me. Okay? Haiti's fearsome gang boss, Jimmy Barbecue Chariezier, I'm probably saying that wrong, has issued a chilling threat to the politicians behind plans for a new government. Barbecue's murderous mob plunged the Caribbean country into chaos earlier this month, demanding that absentee Prime Minister Ariel Henry resign. Under pressure from the international community, unelected Henry agreed on Monday, March 11th, to cede power to a transitional presidential council that will govern Haiti until elections can take place. Now, let's just point something out real quick. The presidential transitional council is a bunch of horse shit because this guy runs the country, you see. If the guy can turn around and be like, hey, Prime Minister, don't make me kill you. I'll murder your family unless you get the fuck out of the country. Well, buddy, we got to have a government, you know. What government shall we have? And then, you know, the guy who just threatened your family is like, well, set up some kind of council or whatever. You just have them go sit in a room and shuffle papers around. I'll keep everybody in line. You have a president of the country. His name is Barbecue, all right? Haiti is governed by a man named Barbecue. And it's going to stay that way for a good long time. Plans for the council were rejected on Wednesday, March 13th, but on Thursday, March 14th, officials said the majority of Haitian parties and coalitions were in agreement. The names of those who will sit on the council were submitted to CARICOM, a trading bloc of Caribbean countries that is aiding Haiti's transition. Maybe we should transition Haiti all the way. Maybe we should give them, you know, gender theory. Do that, okay? Hey, Barbecue, you're working for Satan, aren't you? We've got something you've just got to try. However, gangs are now control a vast swath of the country, and experts say any new government will likely have to negotiate with them. Although violence subsided following Henri's resignation, shootings started again late Wednesday, and officials were forced to extend the nighttime curfew until Sunday, March 17th. Barbecue, the gang leader at the center of the violence, released a 7-minute audio message that has been shared on WhatsApp, threatening the politicians who look to set to take part in the transitional presidential council. Voice of America reports he said, "Don't you have any shame? You have taken the country where it is today. You have no idea what will happen. I'll know if your kids are in Haiti, if your wives are in Haiti, if your husbands are in Haiti, if you're going to run the country, all your family ought to be there." Barbecue previously said his mob do not care. That's a quote, ladies and gentlemen. His mob do not care about Ariel Henry's resignation, telling W Radio, quote, "We are going to continue the fight for Haiti's liberation." That's right, ladies and gentlemen. He's a freedom fighter, don't you know? He's fighting to liberate that country from something or other, you know? The oppression of, you know, this, it's that, you know, it's that legacy of white supremacy is probably what it is. One of the things I saw on Twitter that made me laugh real hard, some liberal idiot who, you know, broke down and gave Musk his $7 or whatever, because he had a really long post. It wasn't worth reading. But he begins his statement with, Haiti is the most chronically unfortunate country in the world. Just a run of bad luck, you know. It's not that they're destroying the place, right? It's not that as soon as they murdered their slave masters. It's not that right after they got done raping and murdering everyone not as black as them, right? It's not that that destroyed everything and that they've been destroying it and turning it back into a jungle ever since. No. They've been chronically unfortunate, you see. You see, when you give somebody a country and then you rebuild it after they destroy it, and then they destroy it again and you rebuild it again, and then you do it again, and then you're on your way back to do it again, you still retain the blame for all of the things that they are doing. Because democracy, you see. And that's why democracy is a bad idea, folks. That's why we don't do it around here, you know. We do it in the United States, I mean, but not here on a radical agenda, you know what I mean? Put everything to a vote. I mean, you guys would make better decisions than, you know, the wisest people in Haiti, obviously, but, you know. Chronically unfortunate, ladies and gentlemen. That's what's going on down there. And, you know, here at the Radical Agenda, we're not, you know, chronically unfortunate. We consider ourselves some of the most fortunate people in the world, actually. I'm very glad to be able to do this. But I have had a little bit of a technical problem with my phones this evening. And since I can't talk to you, I'm going to call it a night, all right? It's 10:43. I would have liked to go to 11:30, but if I can't say the number 500 times, then I'm, you know, I have no crutches. And so I'm going to go out on that good note, and I hope that you will continue to tune in. If you are listening on some other platform at some other time, I invite you to join us for live program. We do it every Friday around about 9:30. Once in a while, get on time. Once in a while, we're a little late. And if you think that the program's good, you should pay for it. Of course, you can't leave this all on Keck App and Tony and Libertariat and who's the other one? The other one is... fan of the era here tonight on Odyssey. Thank you very much, guys. And that'll be great. So there's a lot of ways to do that. GiveSendGo.com/SPM, like Surreal Politics Media. My Cash App. Send me some Cash App, like, right now. Do it. You have the Cash App thing. Just send me the money, and then I'll spend it. It'll be great. It's Edgy Chris is my cash tag. You can send me Bitcoin, Monero, Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash. Any of that stuff is all the... I'm going to read them off right now. I'm kidding. No, I'm not going to do that. You go to ChristopherCantwell.net/donate. You'll find all my crypto QR codes and keys, the public keys, of course. And that'd be great. Then you give me the crypto, and then, you know, you guys all got richer lately anyway. What else? What are I going to say? I got the Amazon wish list, whatever you want. You know, I make it really easy to pay me. You can become a member, surrealpolitics.com/join. You can get yourself a Radical Agenda t-shirt, surrealpolitics.com/shop. You know, we try to make it easy for you to fork over them shackles, goy, all right? You know what I need? I'll tell you what. If you don't have that much money on you, this thing again. Nice if I could just get fabulously wealthy and then I didn't have to.
3 extra shekels.
Then I could just hit the button, and then Donald Trump Jr. would say, or Eric Trump would say,
3 extra shekels.
As soon as I asked him to, and I wouldn't have to reset my stupid MIDI board because I bought a used one trying to save a buck. Anyway, so we do it every Friday, 9:30 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time. Monday, we come here. We're much better behaved for Surreal Politics, and that'd be a fine thing for you to do if, you know, you want to try to get somebody exposed to it without getting yourself, you know, fired. You know, you'd get fired, but, you know, maybe not the same day. You get a couple of weeks' notice, severance, maybe. But Wednesday, you know, it's just you and me. Just you and the paying customers and me on the member show. So if you're a member, realpolitics.com/join, then you can come and join the member chats every Wednesday. And I'd love to hear from you. And then you get members only exclusive bonus content. The old Radical Agenda episodes, you might recall, I had unpublished everything when I got out of prison. I was like, oh my God, I got to take everything down. I've been deplatformed. I got to figure out it all. And so I started republishing things. So the entire archive of Outlaw Conservative is up. The entire archive of Some Garbage Podcast is up, except for episode 7. We'll get to that later. The first 50-something episodes of Radical Agenda are up. All right. If you've been listening, just, you know, maybe since Charlottesville, you just started listening after this stint in prison. You know, that's how people measure the stages of the Radical Agenda by when I go to prison. It's kind of how it works. It's not exactly how it works. It's kind of an idea. And so you can listen to the very beginnings of the Radical Agenda and see how this whole fucking train wreck got started. That'd be a fun thing for you to do if you haven't had a chance yet. And you get, when you're a member, it's realpolitics.com/join. Then you get member content on Cerebral Politics, you get member content on ChristopherCantwell.net, and you get member content on FullHouseMembers.com, those HAUS, the Full House podcast guys. And, you know, they're a lot nicer than me. They're, like, great. They're actually, like, quality people. They're not filthy fucking degenerates who just, like, took a right turn politically. They're, like, actually decent folks. And they put out a good podcast that, like, you won't – they cut their fucks and shits out of it. Like, when I do Cerebral Politics – I try not to curse, and then I fail, and then you hear it on the podcast. Anyway, like, they don't do that. They're really good guys, and so they got a great podcast that you could get for free, but you could get even more of it with your SurrealPolitics.com membership if you sign in with your SurrealPolitics membership at FullHouseMembers.com. So all of these things are available to you because we're on the it's hardly the beginning. I've been at this over a fucking decade already. That's how I'm so goddamn good at it, you know. But this little thing that we just started, you know, it's a little over a year in the making, and it's starting to actually, like, come together a little bit. So keep on fucking paying me, and I'll get it all together, and we'll actually get it worked out. Everything will be fucking great. And if you do that, then I'll enjoy it more. But I'm going to do it whether you pay me or not, because I just can't fucking stand to let the Jews win.
That's it. It's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
You know what you call people you can't talk to? Enemies. And if we want to divide our society into armed camps of enmity, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing.
A radical agenda, the event has turned into an opportunity for the left to push a racial and radical agenda.
Implementing their radical agenda is the only thing they care about. They're bad actors.
What they want to do here is ram their radical agenda down your throat.
These are great Americans. These are people that want to see great things for the country. You know, they try and build them like sort of a radical agenda. It's not a radical agenda. It's called the Second Amendment.
Fuck you, pay me.